back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guess is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, everything that I've been reading and seeing says that this war could be going on for a year or more. And, you know, I don't think any of us can conceive, you know, Americans, that this is going to be going on for a year, because as powerful as Russia is, as a nation militarily, you would have thought that by now, and as they thought, that they would have been able to have crushed Ukraine. But they're not stupid. They know that NATO countries along with America, and clearly America is the stalwart inside of NATO, that they have made this difficult, more difficult on Russia than they ever conceived it can be. And Russia is certainly not going to back up, because as you have been talking about, that the importance of their borders, and yet there's talk that this war could be going on. It's been going on a long time, since 2014. But
Earl, one of the things you got to appreciate, and we were talking about that just before you went, when I went to the commercial, these wars, the two dominant powers since World War II, they've taken sides in conflicts, whether it was the 1948 Chinese Revolution, in which the Soviet Union played a major role in helping to encourage the overthrowing of the Chiang Kai-shek regime, and of course the Chinese government under Mao Zedong, you know, taking over. Whether it was Vietnam with the French there, first of all at the close of World War II, and then being finally driven out in 1954, the ammunition and the training that the Viet Minh, had at the time. All of that support
came from Russia,
and also, you know, when you take a look at it from the standpoint of the assault on Hong Kong, and as part of the Chinese Revolution, again the Russians involved in all of that, and then Korea, Russia and China both had a major role in helping the North Koreans, at least save North Korea and keep it under communist control. Vietnam was a clear indication of that, where Russian and Chinese, including probably, you know, some combat pilots of both Russia and China, taking part in the Vietnam War.
So,
and
Professor,
you know how long that war lasted.
But how did so Russia was the ally of the United States in World War II.
Sure.
How do we get to the point where that ended? And we became, and they became our enemy, and we became their enemy.
Because we consumed one of the major concerns that Hitler had, and that was that his ultimate enemy was going to be communism. And one of the reasons why we, the British and the French and the United States gave lip service to it, allowed Hitler to progress the way he was, because his first championing movement was to block and to combat communism. And his thing was, my job in my society is to stand between the Western world and communism. And so he waged the war based on that. And then all of a sudden, the monster got out of control, and now we had to deal with them. And then, of course, we needed Russia, because the Soviet Union during World War II, up until the early part of the late part of 1944, over 60% of the German land forces were facing Russia.
So were the Germans.
We didn't take on.
So were the Germans socialists?
The Germans were socialists, a fascist society that believed in authoritarianism.
Okay.
And avowed nationalist concept to dominate and control a way of thinking using race and political ideology as two of the unifying factors, and to impose those two concepts with militarism. And that's what Hitler did. The fact is, you had two giant monsters, Stalin, who killed just as many people as Hitler, the civilian people as Hitler did, and then, of course, him going up against Germany. What you had with Hitler was the idea that most of my forces need to be designed to destroy the Soviet Union because they have a lot of reserves of oil and other foodstuffs, and plus it's a huge land, a nation, right, where we can engage in Lebensraum and kill off most of the Russian people through ethnic cleansing and then move some of our Germanic people into there to co-create a whole new race in the society of people. That was fascism. And they if Germany had never invaded, you know, probably Poland and then taken over France or whatever, they, we may have allowed Germany and the Soviet Union to kill each other off. But we had another problem. We had a fascist by the name of Benito Mussolini in the Mediterranean that the British had to take on. So we were forced by default. And then in 1940, you had the Rome-Berlin-Tokyo axis, in which Japan joined Germany and Italy with their imperialist and authoritarian rule, and we had to deal with all three. And then when the Japanese, remember, the Germans didn't, we didn't declare war on Germany. What happened was that Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, and then we declared war on Japan, and then Germany and Italy jumped in to declare war on us.
So
because there were many American people between 1939 and 1941, up to December 7th, most Americans didn't even want to participate in the war in Europe. So, and we could care less about what was going on with the Japanese and the Chinese in Asia.
So
but after the attack on Pearl Harbor, we changed that.
So, Professor Harvey, the average person listening, like me, don't know all of that history, but listening to you, you are clearly saying that this is what's happening is not new, and this grudge has been going on for a long time, and we're being drawn into something that that we really need to think long and hard about before, you know, we really jump into this full throttle.
But Earl, you know, the thing that we have to appreciate now than we did back then, and I'm just talking to now the last right. century, within really the last 80 years or so, and that is that now the United States has the global reach in which we control or can regulate 90% of the world's exports going to and all over the world.
Right.
There's a reason why we have those 10 multi-billion dollar super aircraft carrier battle groups out there. There are about 10 of them out there, but at least 8 of them out there on the oceans at all times.
Yeah, to control commerce.
To control commerce. And what's commerce? This big business. Our military is really the police force, especially the, and with the elite forces of the Marines and other specialized groups, Delta Force, all those other elite
Professor
groups.
Professor Harvey, that's great for us in America, but the rest of the world doesn't like that.
Well, the rest of the world do because they want peace of commerce. You got to understand
and somebody has to be able to control that.
And we, the United States, control it. Think about this: who controls the two most important seaways in the world right now? And I'm talking now the Suez Canal.
And the Panama Canal.
Just take a look at the map. And at the bottom of the world, who controls the sea lanes, even though they're treacherous down there? Africa is one with the Cape of Good Hope. The other is, you know, down around Argentina and Chile. That's why, if you remember that Falkland Islands battle fought in the 1980s was so important. The British got their presence down there to make sure we keep an eye on Chile and Argentina down there. And then, of course, Australia is an ally, along with New Zealand. So the United States, because of that, has a strategic control over all the major global outlets,
Professor
it's important
Harvey,
to keep those lanes open.
I know, but the rest of the world, I mean, especially, you know, China and Russia and others are saying – Hey, you only make up 4% of the global population. Why are you controlling all of that?
They're controlling all that because he who controls the purse strings rules the world.
But yeah, but Professor Harvey, the other nations don't want to be ruled by the United States.
Well, they want the benefits of it. It's one thing not want to be ruled by, but you want the benefits of it.
Yeah, but
and so that's the key. I mean, do you want a bunch of pirates taken over? Look what happened with that situation down along the African coast.
Based on what you're saying, and it's true what you're saying is 100% the truth, then that's why we keep spending almost $1 trillion a year on military. We'll always do that because we'll always want to remain that, you know, the most powerful on Earth.
Earl, for 30 years, the most dominant warship in the world were the Nimitz-class aircraft carriers. And around that carrier battle group, you know, 8 or 9 to 10, you know, other warships escorted. But the United States keeps at least 8 of those at sea at all times. Now, about 8 or 9 years ago, they introduced a new class of aircraft carriers to replace that one. And those were the Gerald Ford class. And they've already named 4 of those super carriers. They're supposed to be more efficient in the whole bit, but there's supposed to be 10 of them over the next 60 years.
So, Professor Harvey, you got to hold on a second.
$7.8 billion, Earl. $7.8 billion for one
piece.
Ship.
Hey, Professor Harvey, hold on. We got to go to a break. I want to go back to that when we come back. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, the reason, man, I love having you on so much is I learned so much from you. You know, we know that our nation spends what people will say is an inordinate amount of money and resources on the military, and continues, and neither Democrat nor Republican has the courage to balk at that. But you just pointed out all these different things. The nation can't ever separate itself from those expenditures then, based on the knowledge that you just put out there. You know, and I remember reading about the new, aircraft carriers that were, on the drawing table, you know, and I remember reading about that 10 years ago. Well, that time is here now, huh?
Develop an effective weapon system. Look how long it took for them to work on and develop the latest hotshot aircraft they got there with the F-35, the most expensive weapon system in American history.
Yeah, but it's been a failure.
Well, it's not anymore because they keep working out the kinks. It's just like they had with the Osprey, which was a combination helicopter plane that the Marine Corps kept pushing.
Yeah,
and it killed a whole lot of folk on the whole bit, but they continued to work until they developed that system because the Marines wanted that capability. And now, of course, the new submarine that they got out there now, the Virginia class, to replace the Los Angeles class. And those ships are designed to go out there and track down Russian missile boats. And now the Chinese have them, so they're tracking them down. But also to provide, you know, escort for the carrier battle groups to protect the carriers against submarine attacks. So all of those weapon systems that are out there, high-tech stuff.
Does it make us always the good guy, though, Professor Harvey? Are we always the good guy in this?
Well, in this case, the belief is that we have to be. Because let's face it, we have 10 million or 10,000 nuclear weapons ourselves, 10,000 of them, that are deadly, and at least with that that tripod system that we have, that way of delivery.
And under President Barack Obama, updated nuclear weapons.
Well, yes, all the presidents have updated. You know, that's no big thing. I mean, just with Obama, go all the way back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, we had to update.
Right.
And because the thing is that those systems are designed to dominate and eliminate or hold off or stabilize any threat in the world. And when the Russians got over 13,000 nuclear weapons, the Chinese got probably close to 1,000 now. And in North Korea, they only got 5 missiles, and 3 of them fall in the ocean, but they still got them. You know, so you have to worry about them. And then, of course, our other two allies, England and France, they've got their own nuclear capabilities. But guess what?
And so does Israel.
Yes, and so does Israel. It's quiet and they're kept, but they got them too. And we know that they have the capability, but so do they. So,
well, then why are we raising so much hell about Iran then?
Because we don't want.
I know we want to pick and choose who gets nuclear weapons.
Well, we not only that, but we don't want those nuclear weapons in that area. Even though we have two nations that some of them have Muslim ties in India and Pakistan,
right,
they got them too.
Right.
So you got all of them, and India got theirs because China had theirs, and then Pakistan and India being mortal enemies, Pakistan said, "Well, if you're gonna get them, we're gonna get them too."
Right.
So. They have them, and the fear that you have is you don't want nuclear weapons in and around a lot of the oil is
right.
flowing out of the down in the Arabian Sea area and in the Gulf and the Gulf region. You don't the Persian Gulf. You don't want all of those nuclear weapons floating around down there.
So that's really the main reason that they don't want.
But that's the reason why you have allies, because one of the things that people got to understand about the NATO, the 30 NATO countries, is that under that mutual agreement, if you are attacked, not only will you get our military intervention, but you have a nuclear umbrella over you. That's what that does, and that's what's so significant about this entire issue, that you have that mutual support, including my backup of nuclear weapons, should Russia decide to get out of hand. So, and that's one of the reasons why I tell people that Putin is not stupid, because he also knows that even though China is a communist country, that Russia and China, historically, when you go back and take a look at them, even though they've joined forces on occasions, they still have a hidden mistrust towards one another. And China has their nuclear weapons, Russia has theirs, so it's like a stalemate of understanding that we will help each other out to a degree, but I still don't have a complete trust of you. So that's sort of like a hidden standoff.
Well, that's mutual destruction that has kept everything in place.
It's the old idea of man, mutual assured destruction,
right.
And that's what's still governing the world. Because right now, as we speak, in cities like Milwaukee, Charlotte, and any other places that have key military locations, and no doubt Washington, D.C., and New York City, and Los Angeles, and all those places, Russia has those cities in their sight. And if you don't bomb mine, I won't bomb yours. And so that we still live under that doctrine. And whether you're Democrat or Republican, that has been the mantra, the doctrine that has controlled this country since the 1950s, when those intercontinental ballistic missile systems were put in place and perfected by 1960 with the understanding that I can reach you and you can reach me. It's just that the United States, because of their development of the missile boats and because of the development of the quick strike, nuclear bombers like the B-1 and the B-2, and even the B-52, as aged as it is, with those nuclear-tipped cruise missile systems. You know, they got all of that there. And then, of course, you got aircraft that, you know, with the swift-flying, B-1 Lancer that can fly at subsonic speed.
Professor Harvey, you are terrifying us.
Well, you know, it's not about terrifying.
Some of us want to live, man. You know,
Well, we've been living under this umbrella era for years.
I know, but nobody's been talking about like what Russia is talking about now. Nobody would dare even mention that.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that if the American taxpayers, there's no reason for them to sit here and shudder. They pay for it.
I know.
You know, when people come up and tell me, thank me for my service, I always tell them, well, you thank yourself because you're the taxpayers. You paid for it. So we pay for all of this stuff. You know, and it's like we want to pay for it, but I don't want to know anything about it. That's the same as somebody saying that, you know, I believe in the right to bear arms, but I don't want to say anything about guns falling in the hands of criminals and terrorists to use. On one hand, you want to have a blind eye, but you want this over here when it suits your fancy. And that's one of the problems, Earl, with the hypocrisy
about
democracy.
Hang on a second. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we want to talk about democracy. 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey is on the line all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. And Professor Harvey, I want to go. I want to be where you are. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. Man, you know, Professor Bob Harvey, who is just an amazing, amazing, you know, encyclopedia, walking encyclopedia on a whole array of things. But Professor Harvey, when you start talking about the military portion of things. And, you know, we're watching, again, what's happening in Ukraine. And many of us are saying, you know, let's have at it. Let's stop this. You know, this war is what it is. And Russia is saying, hey, America, this is a proxy war. You continue to give weapons to Ukraine, and that's not even a part of NATO, and yet you are now even agreeing with, right now of all times, bringing Finland and Sweden on bordering nations, and making them a part of NATO. It's like poking the bear. Why is it, Professor Harvey, that the American people, I mean, we don't know these things for the most part. You're a professor, and it is, you know, one of the areas of discipline that you've been trained in. But the average American doesn't know anything about those things. We're just trying to live day to day.
Well, they don't want to know, Earl. Unfortunately, there's a large segment, and I'm talking now probably, you know, maybe close to 50% of the American people, they don't want to know. They pay their taxes. They get up. They go to work. They live. They're born. They live and they die. Never wanting to know all of the intricacies of what's going on with our country. We'd much rather turn a blind eye and have what I call benign ignorance of the facts. But in this day and age, there's no such thing as benign ignorance. Maybe for little children, yes. But for adults with all of the knowledge and information systems out there, it's now maligned ignorance. We want to be told what to think and do, and so we let political parties like the Republicans and the Democrats, and I would have to say straight up front, when you look at the two of them, the Republican Party is the worst because it is an authoritarian party. It does preach this idea of all or nothing. And that may work well in Russia and China and other places, but that does not bode well in a democratic society. And the Democratic Party, they don't have the guts nor the intestinal fortitude to be able to sit there and lead because they're afraid that, you know, they can't either reach a certain market or They don't want to upset anybody, and so they're all stupid and waiting for them to come, just like the Republicans are. So we got two political parties that are crippling our democracy because it doesn't encourage the American people to think. You know, and I have no illusions about the idea. Naturally, being ex-military, to have a fascination for all those military hardware and strategies that we use to employ those, to deploy those that hardware. But by the same, there are consequences for sitting here paying your taxes and then wanting to deny the bad things that come out of it. You only want to glorify the good. And neither one of the political parties got a monopoly on militarizing, our foreign policy.
That's true.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah.
And everybody understands that we didn't have any problem going beating up on the Arabs, bombing the hell out of them.
That's right.
You know, we did it. We did it. All of them did it. And then it turned off. When I say all of them, I mean all of the presidents that we elected did it and got political mileage out of it. And then, of course, now we want to ignore the fact that while we're doing that, there are civilian casualties, what we call collateral damage that occurs. Even with the smart bombs that we deploy in those weapon systems, we still kill civilians. So let's not be naive. The world is an armed camp. It happened that way between the 1950s and the 1960s, the moment we started developing nuclear weapons. And when you've got two countries, Russia and the United States, between them, 23,000 nuclear weapons, enough to kill everybody in the world about 250 times apiece. Hell, you can only kill somebody once, but we got enough of those weapon systems to do that. And even if China and England and France and Pakistan and India and Israel, even if and North Korea, even if they don't even not launch their nuclear weapons, they don't have to.
Professor Harvey,
if the United States and Russia go ballistic and start launching theirs all over the place, no one is safe.
You are scaring the bejesus out of people, and they just, who do we have on the line?
Well, hopefully, the American people need to be scared, because
Professor
we've
Harvey,
got
let's,
a society.
Let's bring our caller on. Who do we have on the line?
L.A., Tom's calling back.
Hey, L.A., what's going on, man? You say what?
Hey. First off, we the people are the government. You must always remember that. And I'm a proud FDR Democrat. Professor Harvey, you are brilliant. And I wanted to know what you think about the idea of actually on our paychecks that we get every 2 weeks, where it actually shows where all of our tax dollars are actually going. So in other words, the military-industrial complex, it would actually show how much is going there, since people want to put their head in the sand about what it is that we do in other countries through, through our military-industrial complex. Maybe if they actually saw it on their paycheck and see how much money is actually going from each paycheck to that adventure, maybe then they would wake up. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's an ingenious idea, but I'm not so sure. People are struggling so much now, sir, to try to make ends meet. Most Americans don't care. As long as that thing is green and it's legit, legal tender, they're gonna spend it to pay their bills and take care of their children and their families. It is a nice idea, but I don't think I really believe, unfortunately, that we the people of the United States have allowed ourselves, because of the history of our government and the federal government particularly, but also the state governments. We elect those people. We send them to represent us in this representative government, and we don't care about them anymore until about 2 years later for the congressional or the legislative branch, and then with the senatorial, but both the state and local level. We don't care anything about them until 4 to 6 years later when they come around to receive our votes again. And then in the process,
You know what's really interesting? More than half the country, if not 80% of the country, would never allow for any of these politicians to watch their children at night, babysitting them, but yet they will allow them to make life and death decisions about what it is that goes on in our country. It's pretty amazing.
Hey,
Tom,
I agree, but remember,
thank you very much
we don't have to wait until We don't have to wait until night. We can. I'm afraid to trust them during the day. You know, at mid noon. I mean, it's incredulous. I was sitting watching a debate down here in North Carolina for the senatorial race coming up, and this was a Republican debate, and there were three of them there, two men and a woman, and they were going on and on. Not one of them, when they asked the question, "Do you believe that Biden won the election?"
Right.
You know, when the election, he won the election fair and square, and all of them, all Republicans, this is a Republican debate, all of them led into the idea that it happened, but I don't believe it. I think that there was some corruption. Yet so far, the only corruption that's been shown were from Republicans. Meadows, it was just discovered that Meadows voted in two states. You know, and so the only corruption, and look what they did in Arizona. They went out and hired private, Trumpster-orientated investigators in Arizona.
Well, that's in Wisconsin,
to come up
too.
With something and didn't find it. They haven't found anything
Professor
yet.
Professor Harvey, that's in Wisconsin, too, and many other states.
Well, you're sure, but I'm just saying that we as a people want to be led around the nose, unfortunately. We don't want to think. And even if we do, we want to be fed and told what to think, because we're being fed by the new information systems, the website, you know, the texting.
Yeah,
now this new
Professor Harvey,
tycoon guy that just took over with texting.
Let's do this.
So now we got all these things under control.
Professor Harvey,
they tell us what to do.
Who do we have on the line?
We have Andy calling from Beaver Dam.
Hey, Andy, quickly, go ahead.
I'll just give you a quick one. Professor Harvey, how do you ultimately think Ukraine's going to turn out? I mean, what, you know, we're doing about all we can without getting right in the middle of it ourselves.
Yeah.
How is this all going to come out in the wash?
They're going to lose.
My projection, sir, is that the world is going to lose the Ukraine for right now until Putin is finally out of office. They're going to lose Ukraine, because unless you go in with military force,
meaning the United States.
I'm not talking about giving weapons. See, that's not
right.
Enough. I'm talking about now going in, you know, with F-15 and F-22 Raptors. I'm talking about going in now with, you know, a tactical team with M-60 tanks going in there and killing Russian tanks. That's what I'm talking about. And you don't get that. You're not going to get that. And because you're not going to get it, Ukraine is going down. Now, what's going to happen is a backlash effect. Like I said, the Baltic states, they are reinforcing. They're already a part of NATO. So Putin knows that the Ukraine is the last one that he can take without consequences. And that's what he's banking on, and he's banking right. Now, you're going to always have resistance in the Ukraine. But unfortunately, you know, and under the Trump administration, Zelensky and the Ukrainians probably would have joined maybe a couple of years ago, but Trump blocked it. He would never have allowed that to happen. And with him disrupting NATO, there are two things that have gone on here. One, Trump's interference and favoring Putin over Zelensky, that's one. The second is that Trump came in and so disrupted NATO that they lost focus of everything but their own self-existence. Because he was talking about at one time, there was even rumors floating around about the United States pulling out of NATO.
Right.
Remember, he was already saying that every NATO member need to pay more. So that's one issue. But there's a third issue that all Americans or citizens of the United States need to think about. The Russians, the Ukrainians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, all of those dictatorial societies outside of the Ukraine, all of those societies saw what happened on January 6th.
Hey, Professor Harper, we got to go to break. Hold the thought. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. Be right back. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. You know, it's always just an honor to have Professor Bob Harvey on the line. You know, Professor Harvey, before we went to break, you were expressing what took place on January 6th. You know, many people have lost faith, if they had any at all, in our government, because we saw what took place. And yet the orchestrator, the chief orchestrator of it, it looks like he's going to be able to walk away. And so you just, you know, you hear the constant beat from the right that, you know, well, Black Lives Matter and what they did and Antifa and all of those things, and none of whatever they did in those so-called riots about George Floyd came anywhere near or close to trying to overthrow a government that we saw with our own eyes.
Sure. The whole world saw it. You know, and it's a travesty of everyday common sense for a people. That I'm talking now, and this is dealing now with the, I'm just looking at the election returns for the 20 presidential election. It is amazing that 53% of all men in this country voted for Trump, whereas women, 57%, voted for Biden. You know, Biden got 81,268,924 votes. Trump got 74,216,154 votes. Biden won by 7 million votes. Yet, nearly half of the country, and particularly to be more specific, 53% or 61% of white men believe that Trump, that they voted for Trump, and of that 61%, roughly about 58% believe that Trump won the election. Now, the most powerful ethnic, gender-orientated, race-orientated voting bloc in this country is white men. And they have the most wealth, they have the most influence in all of our industries, military, broadcasting, whatever. And yet the majority of them, 58%, believe that Trump won the election. Now, what are you going to do with that? I mean, and believe it or not, when you break it down by gender, white men, 61% voted for Trump, white women, 55%. Earl, so what that means is that most white Americans who are the dominant racial and gender groups in this country, they supported Trump and the conservative agenda. And you must realize that mathematically and numerically, 69% of the American population is white. 69%. That means that only 31% of people are color. So if you've got that type of racial and gender divide, what that means is that the power, despite the fact that the majority of Americans collectively, that 39% white, you know, and the rest of us who vote together, we are the majority in terms of voting for things that make America more equitable. But when you've got a majority of white America who believes that either Trump won the election or they voted for Trump, a man who was impeached twice, who was in constant, had the country in constant turmoil, in fact, the world in constant turmoil, who lied repeatedly, who slandered people, including women, who divided people at every turn, who set the table for a man like Putin because he worshiped dictators. He set the table for this. And we, the people of the United States, a year and a half later, and Biden has only been in office now for a period of about 16 months.
I know. That's 16 amazing.
16 months. 16 months, and already people are hollering in the fact that the economy is bad. Well, you just came off of a pandemic. You just came off of one of the worst. Donald Trump, in his 4 years, spent over $7 trillion. Nobody talks about that on the Republican side. And how in the world could you logically and intelligently sit down and talk about how a person, it's one thing to say, okay, maybe 2 million votes were illicit, but you can't sit there and say that to say that 7 million people more than what your man got was illegitimate. You're willing to discount 81 million Americans as opposed to 74, and you will never hear Republicans, never hear them talk about the fact that 81 million voted for Donald Trump. They always mention the 74 million. He got the most in his history. Well, yeah, he lost. Because most Americans looked at this thing and said, oh, hell no. No, we are sick and tired of this disruption. This man has his finger on the nuclear button with those 10,000 nuclear weapons, and we're not about to let him stay in the White House.
You know, he Professor was Harvey, and even in the face of all of that, he is still now the front runner for 2024. Oh, sure.
In fact, the Republicans have removed themselves from the Democratic process because they're not going to have, they don't want to have any debate,
right.
Presidential debate. They don't want to do it. What they're going to do is just skip over that and put Trump in. That's the mark of a dictator. What is happening in this country, unfortunately, and this is where we come into looking at reality right in the face. The racial politics in this country today is that most white Americans are willing not necessarily to bail out from a democratic process, but an authoritative democracy in which minority rules. Because when you add in about, you know, the 39 to 40% of white America that believe that democracy still has an important place in the world, and we are the leading democratic society in the world. And when people all over the world see the most powerful nation on earth, in the history of the world, militarily and politically and anything else, when they watch and see the majority, people from the majority population storming the nation's capital, threatening to assassinate the Speaker of the House, going into the Speaker, the Vice President. Putting their feet up on the table, you know, where they govern in this country, going into the Speaker's office, you know, putting your feet up on the table and taking information and material out of there. When you see that, that lets you know that this country is in serious trouble, and we are the leading democracy of the world. You know, and sadly, the man who was the culprit in all of this is Donald Trump. But the society, the majority population, the people, and as I've always said, is who paid the greatest price for our democratic ideals, going all the way back to the founding fathers in the 18th century, capitulated to it. And that's the epitaph that we're going to write on this nation's tombstone if we don't wake up. Because without the majority making the decision to move back towards a more centralized and intelligent decision about how a democracy is run, you're going to see more Putin. Because I guarantee you, if we allow Putin to do what he's doing in the Ukraine, and that's what we're doing, you're going to see China try it next. They're going to try to annex Hong Kong and Formosa. They're going after them next.
Professor,
it doesn't
Harvey,
stop there with the Ukraine.
Professor Harvey, great stuff as always, man. I'll be reaching out again. That's Professor Bob Harvey, Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy those 80 degrees temperatures. We'll be enjoying the 40 degrees here.
I'm going out there and enjoy the sun right now, Earl.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Sam, as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.